Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 429. In this episode, Scott talks with Lars Klint about developing for Windows Phone 8.1.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I am talking with Lars Klint. He is a Windows Phone developer MVP, and he is deeply, deeply passionate about the Windows Phone platform. I like the platform, but he's here to sell me on what's really amazing about Windows Phone. Even though I have an app in the App Store, I still get yelled at for having an iPhone. So Lars is going to sell me on the great grand future. How's it going?
Yeah, good. How are you, Scott?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for reaching out to me about this, because I know that you're a big developer in the Windows Phone platform. What's your biggest app?
I don't have a biggest app as such. I try and do lots of little explorative apps. A lot of my MVP background is really around helping others develop apps and mentoring and exploring and being loud. So,
do you do this as your day job?
No, not at all. No, I rarely get to touch Windows Phone as my day job. That's why I have to do it my own time. I can't help it. I just can't. You know, I just do it.
Well, that's interesting. So that actually kind of speaks to your sense of the strength of the platform that you are dedicating volunteer time for this.
Absolutely.
What phone do you have?
I have a 1020.
A 1020. So that's the one with the 43 megapixel super camera that everyone talks about.
Exactly. Yeah. It is pretty unbelievable camera. I've now pretty much stopped carrying around my big bulky DSLR.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it works so well.
My wife independently chose a 1020 as her camera, and once we set up the OneDrive settings such that she can easily get her pictures off of it, she didn't want to have to plug in a USB cable and get her pictures off that way. So we said when it's on Wi-Fi, put the best quality pictures on OneDrive. So then she, from her perspective, she, as a non-technical person, she comes into the house to make sure the phone's on. She goes to OneDrive and she waits. And then the pictures show up, and then she copies them off of the OneDrive. And I don't know if she knows how that works, but it's magic, and she loves it.
Yeah, my partner's the same. She has a 1520 now. I got hold of one of those for her, and she just loves the big screen and the fact that it's easy.
Really?
She had iPhones before, and she just cracked it with them. And I gave her a couple of choices. You chose Android as well, and she just chose the Windows Phone.
But the big one, though, the 1520, especially for a woman's smaller hands, that's a giant phone.
Yeah, but the cool thing is that in a handbag, you can almost always find it.
Okay, that's true. I saw someone walking across the street. I was at a stoplight once, and I saw someone walking across the street with a 1520, and from a distance, I thought it was a tablet. That is a big phone. Yeah. Is that a 6-inch phone? 6.5?
It's 6-inch, 6 inches. The thing is, once you start using it, and you start using it, you know, with one hand, it takes a couple of days and you get used to it. And now, when she picks up my phone, she's like, oh, God, it's tiny.
It's
all meta perception.
My wife has a 1020, and then for development, I have the 920, the red one.
Yep.
And then I've got a white 1520 with the, what do you call it? The little case that folds up and lets you kind of make a little triangle shaped, stand.
The Nokia one?
Yeah. The stand is lovely. That's a 1080p screen, and for watching Netflix or watching videos, and now that I've got Plex, the Plex application, I can watch movies on a plane. And I almost don't need an iPad, you know? You almost don't need a tablet. The screen is so big.
Does that say more about what people use an iPad for?
Yeah. See, for me, an iPad is like, for my wife, it's Words with Friends and movies. So that's basically what the iPad is for.
Yeah, right.
It's surprising how many people try to get work done on that.
Nah.
So the 1520 has the 1080p screen. The 1020 and 920s have the smaller screen. I feel like the real sweet spot, like if there were a phone that was going to be the phone for the people, it would be the, I think what they call the Verizon icon, the Nokia icon. I think, is that the 930 is the internal?
Yeah, not everywhere else in the world is the 930. I think the Verizon one is the 929 or something. But yeah, I agree. If that had the camera of the 1020, it would be set.
Right. So you'd have a perfect camera. You'd have the TrueView camera, 43 megapixels, and then you'd have a 1080p screen on a 4.5-inch screen. Is that the size?
Yeah, five. I think it's five.
Five? Yeah. Yep. After using the 1520 giant phablet.
Phablet? Oh, God, that word.
Yeah, well, that's what it is, though. That's a big...
I know.
And then switching back to my iPhone 5S, which is just the tiniest screen. It is definitely frustrating. But, of course, the usage of this all comes down to apps. You know, that's the thing I always say, that when all the apps are there, then I will move. And then recently we announced this notion of universal apps, and I'm a little confused. We had Windows Phone 7, then we moved to 8, and the move from 7 to 8 was the move from a kind of a completely Silverlight operating system to an operating system kernel that is based on what's in Windows 8. Is that true?
Sort of, yeah. They were borrowing ideas from it, but it wasn't a true, I guess, convergence between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So this is now what's coming soon. You know, rumors have it that, you know, in a couple of weeks, all the updates will be pushed out to all the current Windows 8 devices, which can all be upgraded to 8.1, which is cool.
So and, everyone will get 8.1.
Everyone will get 8.1. Exactly. It'll be forced upon them almost, which is not a bad thing because it is fully compatible. So there's really no reason not to upgrade. You get an enormous amount of benefits from it. Really, it should have been called Windows Phone 9, I think. But I guess the versioning needs to be in line with Windows.
Right.
That's probably the main reason. So yeah, there's universal apps are coming. And I guess what that means is that as a developer, you can have a single project or a single solution with a few projects in it that will be able to target both Windows and Windows Phone in a, I guess, native way on the same runtime.
Okay. So when I go file a new project in Visual Studio now and I say I want to have an app for both Windows 8.1 full screen apps, we call store apps, formerly Metro apps, and I want to target the phone at the exact same time, I get three projects. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. You get three projects. So you get a phone project, you get a Windows project, and you get a shared project. And the shared project is sort of, it's where you put all your common logic. It's similar to what people have used before with portable class libraries, but where portable class libraries created a DLL for you that you then used in your project, there is no DLL now. So it's more like a linked project, basically.
Okay, so this is a way of saying, this is all my shared code. It's not going to compile into a DLL, the result
Correct.
Of that project.
That's right.
So that project doesn't really compile on its own. It compiles within the context of...
Exactly. So you still only get two compiled apps that you then have on Windows and Windows Phone. And the cool thing is then that you can publish both to the App Store or to the store, Microsoft Store, within with the same context.
And when you compile them and send them up to the stores, the two separate stores, with the same name, I believe, doesn't it show up in the store? It says that when I look in the store and I see an app that's a universal app, it says, oh, there's another app.
Exactly.
How does that work? Does it go based on ID, or how does it know that I've got Foo app here and Foo app there?
It's based on a GUID, which they had some issues with initially figuring out how to then attach the phone apps to them because they had different GUIDs. But I'm not 100% sure about the details, but I believe they've sorted that now.
Okay.
And then you only have to buy it once as well. It'll work on your phone and your tablet, desktop, whatever you're using.
Really? So, okay. So then I'm working on a Windows app right now, although I am a Windows phone app. I'm targeting 8, phone 8, because I haven't, you know, I'm going to wait until it rolls out everywhere. And one of the things that I want is then to make the companion app that runs on Windows, and I want to roam my settings between the two.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, you can't really do that with the current Windows Phone 8. You will have to either, you know, upgrade, merge, whatever you want to call it, into a universal app or Windows Store app, as they're also called, project. So that might be something you have to do.
Okay, so right now, if I wanted to do that, I would hook up my saving of settings to OneDrive using the SDK and basically do it manually. But I understand that with Windows 8.1, the idea of saving into OneDrive and having your settings synced is automatic.
That's right. Yeah, you have it's called roaming setting, the roaming profile for memory, and you can use about 100 kilobytes of storage that you get that will roam seamlessly between devices.
That's pretty cool. So then I could either write a whole bunch of code now, you know, several hundred lines of code and figure it out, or just wait a little while, and then when I target my app to 8.1, it'll just be automatic.
Yeah. Just bear in mind, if you are currently writing an app for Windows Phone 8, you will have to do a bit of hard work to get it to run as a universal app. So this is the confusing part. With Windows Phone 8.1, there are now two ways developers can write apps. For some reason, they're now called Windows Silverlight apps, which is purely for phone. And this is using the same runtime as you have now with Windows Phone 8. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, there's Universal Apps, which is using the Windows runtime to run on both phone and Windows. So you have to choose one or the other when you start your project.
I see. Okay. So we know that Windows Phone was primarily a Silverlight world before the XAML parser was Silverlight, kind of the runtime was Silverlight. And then now that we're running on this new core underneath Windows 8, and 8.1 expands on that, Universal Apps, are they more kind of like Windows RT apps?
Absolutely. They are Windows RT apps.
Okay. So it's a unified runtime between the two. Does that mean that I've got feature parity? Are all the things that I can do in a Silverlight app available today as a Universal app?
No, unfortunately not. So you can possibly say that Microsoft has maybe pushed this out a little bit early, but I understand why, because, you know, they have to start somewhere. But if you want to do something like, for Universal apps, if you want to do stuff like, clipboard or be a ringtone provider, set up alarms, do a lock screen background app, you can't do that. That's not currently available. I do understand that it's coming, but you can't do that yet.
I see. So they've given us some of the APIs, or maybe the top 80%, but that last mile is not there yet.
Exactly. And it's the same if you want to do, well, I don't really want to call them Silverlight apps, but that's what Microsoft calls them. But let's call them Windows Phone native apps. If you want to upgrade to 8.1, you can. All your Windows Phone 8 apps will run on 8.1 without a problem. But if you say you were wanting to port your GPS usage, or, you know, an app that uses GPS in some way as a background provider, you can't do that on 8.1 in Silverlight or in the native apps. So bear that in mind. Don't upgrade just willy-nilly, because it might break a whole bunch of stuff. Just be mindful.
Okay, so let me think, so if I understand this, then there are features that I can have. There are new features available only to the newest app model, which is Universal Apps.
Correct.
But at the same time, there are maybe some underlying operating system features that aren't yet available in Universal Apps, because those projections haven't been made available to developers yet.
Yep, that's right. And then there are also features that are not available to Silverlight 8.1 that wasn't 8.0.
I see.
So it's all a little bit of a mess. It's heading in the right direction, but yeah, it's very valuable to read up on this before you start porting or developing.
Yeah, like my application is an audio podcasting application for news, reading the news. I would want to check out the roaming of settings, which is very important to me, but most important is background audio. So I would hate to go, you know, halfway into doing this and then discover that some important aspect of the background audio service isn't available to me as a universal app yet.
Exactly.
I don't know if it is or not. I haven't checked.
I actually believe that it isn't.
Okay.
I haven't tested that feature because I haven't done anything with background audio. Mm-hmm. But I believe there are some breaking changes around that. So, yeah, be mindful.
Okay. So, then the idea, though, is that if it has all the features that I need and I'm ready to go, I could go and create an application that will, you know, have, what, 80, 90% code reuse? Have you have a sense of the reuse that you can get?
I've seen figures as high as 95, but I think it depends a little bit on your project type as well, what you're trying to do.
Right.
But, there's really, really huge benefits. And then what really excites me is, it's cool that it's here now. It's a little bit broken. Well, there's a few features missing. But the rumors that I hear around the stomping grounds of forums and Twitter and whatever else is that this is now going to be available across Windows or Microsoft platforms so that you can use it on Xbox in the future. So you write an app once, your favorite cooking show app, because that seems to be the thing in Australia, is to, and then it'll work on Xbox and it'll work on Windows and it'll work on Windows Phone.
So that's the kind of the grand convergence that everyone talks about, that we'll have one platform. And then one of the things I think is really nice is that folks like Xamarin really seem enthusiastic about embracing this new model as well. So when I see them doing their demos where you've got a Windows app and a Windows Phone app, they'll go and they'll add in an Android app and they'll use that same shared project type. So theoretically, I could have my news reading application on every platform, everywhere, with as much reuse as is possible.
That would be awesome. That would be certainly. I'm keen to see how Xamarin pans out in terms of universal apps, because I'm sure they'll do something.
Mm-hmm.
That now presents new challenges, because they just got to working with Windows Phone, and they're going to change the two Windows runtime. So. But, who knows where it might go. I know that Microsoft is working on, in-car stuff. So will you be able to get your Newsread app in cars with voice control?
That would be great.
Exactly. That's what really excites me, is the prospect of this, if Microsoft sticks to what they've set out to do with the whole one direction of everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like then, from a developer perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, that I should make sure that my app is using MVVM model view view model, kind of architectural style, and is factored as such that it does not make a lot of assumptions about what's going on in the user interface, so that I could reuse Absolutely. As much of the core logic as possible.
Yeah, I always use MVVM unless it's a really simple project where it sort of just adds too much overhead. MVVM to me just makes sense in 80% of cases, for phone at least. So absolutely.
I'm finding with I'm not as experienced a programmer as you are, I think that I'm having a lot of trouble with asynchrony and keeping track of like what's going on in the background. That's been the most challenging thing to me, although it is comforting that I can do async and await on the Windows Phone.
Yes, yeah, you can. I was just about to say that does help. But if you have background tasks, there is always something. You only have to juggle a few things to get it managed. But clever people will make it work.
Clever people. Uh-oh. Well, now I'm in trouble. Yeah, it just seems like there's so many things that could potentially go wrong about on a mobile device, because your bandwidth comes and goes, your radio might turn off at any time, your Bluetooth might shut off. It's really, with a computer, a desktop machine, it's either on or it's not, and maybe it's on the internet or it's not. But for the most part, it's pretty static. With a phone, other background tasks can pop up, notifications can appear, a lot of stuff can happen at the same time while you're trying to run your application.
Exactly. And, to put a bit of a plug, I'm just finishing up my third ProSight course, which is about building your first Windows Phone app. And that's exactly one of the things I'm talking about, is that you have to be mindful. This is a phone platform. You have to be, you have to think like a user. Okay, I might switch off network. I might not have network. I might open another app suddenly. I might come back to your app. All of this thing, all these usage scenario and workflows you have to think about. So.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll give me a link to that and we'll add it to the show notes, okay?
I shall. It's not live yet, so, but as soon as it is, I will.
Okay, brilliant. Now, what do you think about Microsoft buying Nokia? Was that a good call?
I think it was. If you look at it from Nokia's side, it's been what they've done forever. Nokia's been around for a long, long time, 140 years or something. And they've been, they're starting out producing gumboots and toilet paper and TVs, and they just sell off all this stuff. They seem to be more of an innovative, innovation factory. They come up with these brilliant businesses and they sell them off. So I wasn't surprised. It was a huge part, of course, for Nokia because that's what people know them for. But in terms of behavior, it's not unusual, I don't think. And then from Microsoft's side, it makes perfect sense. They bought a whole logistic, you know, delivery system. So they've a whole hardware delivery system they've basically invested in. So it's not just a brand and some phone models and some people. It's a complete company that knows how to deliver hardware into a global marketplace. So I understand why they did that.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that that'll allow them to innovate faster? I mean, is the idea that you'll be able to come up with newer, more innovative designs? And
I don't know. That's a good question because obviously Nokia has a ton of talented people. We've seen now the, you know, the devices that's come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if Microsoft can leverage of that and improve on it, absolutely.
Yeah. I hope so. I'd like to see some reconciliation of the of the platform and get it down to like what's the flagship, like what's the ultimate, like with an iPhone or with an Android. I feel like there's always that sense of like I just want the best.
Mm.
With Windows Phone, I feel like the 930, the 1020, and the 1520 are all the best for different reasons.
That's right. Yeah, and I think the 930 or the icon is where they were headed with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I've used it a couple of times. It is an absolutely beautiful device. It's got, I don't know how the screen on it is. I often compare it to paper. I don't know if that's, it's a bit weird, but it just feels, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. It's really, really nice, but it doesn't have the camera of the 1020.
That seems to really bother you. You brought that up a number of times. Is that,
yeah, no,
it's just not. See, the thing is, I would give up the camera. It's still a fantastic camera. It's still an 8 megapixel plus camera, I think. It's the
20
megapixel.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I know.
It's a 1080p screen, though. That's what I need. You know what I mean? I need the Retina screen.
Exactly. And you will. You will get that. Yeah. It's coming to all the new Nokia devices, I'm sure, is all Retina or 1080p. But I don't know. I take a lot of photos. I really enjoy the camera on the 1020. I've done a couple of presentations where I display, showcase the zoom on it. So I, take a picture and then zoom in on a particular feature.
Mm-hmm.
And people are just in awe because there's nothing like it.
Yeah. The demo that always blows people's minds is taking a number plate or a license plate photograph. You know, if you're in a cafe and you just point at a car and say, I'm going to take a picture of that number plate from here. And then, and then zoom in and then try to have them do that on my iPhone. It's funny. I'm sitting here teasing you about the difference between 43 megapixels and 20. And I'm still using an iPhone, but I hate the camera on this darn phone.
Well, that might change because they've just hired the top guy at Nokia that built the camera, the 41 megapixel camera. So, hopefully, something cool will come out of Apple.
Pretty cool. Well, another thing to compare between Apple and Windows Phone is, Siri versus Cortana.
Yep. That's, I don't know if people aren't familiar with Cortana, it's like Siri on steroids. It's a convergence of, Siri and Google now. Cortana can do stuff like, it can set up an appointment for, say you have you need to buy your mom flowers, because we all do, all right? And then you say, okay, Cortana, remind me to, ask my mom about flowers next time I talk to her. For example. And then what Cortana does is sets up a reminder, but the reminder will pop up if you're texting your mom or if you're writing her an email or if you're calling her. It'll pop up and say, oh, don't forget to ask your mom about flowers. And that sort of contextual stuff is very cool. And I haven't really seen that on any other platform.
So on iPhone, they make a big deal out of the geofencing contextual aspect of things. So the killer feature is to say, remind me to get milk when I leave here.
Well.
But the idea of contextual in the sense of whenever I interact with this other individual does not exist.
No, it doesn't. And it's very useful. I've used it a few times.
Yeah.
You know, where someone says, oh, don't forget to ask this person about that. And we go, oh, all right, I'll set a reminder. So whenever you interact with that person, you'll actually remember to ask them.
See, that's something that I feel is an education issue. I feel like, and this is just I am a Microsoft employee, but speaking just personally, I don't think we do a great job of educating people on these features. Like, rather than, music videos and commercials that are like that, I would like us to have single-tasked commercials that explain something. Like, just show me someone doing a real life situation. Like, you know, call my wife. It then calls my wife. Then I hang up and I say, remind me to ask my wife about getting the house painted next time I talk to her.
Mm.
You know, that's, these are very reasonable things, but for someone who buys the phone at their local telephone company, they're not really going to discover those.
No, they're not. They don't know. And that's, it's a beef I've had with Microsoft marketing for a number of years, because I seem to do all that for them. So, because I discover these features because I can't put the phone down. I just keep using it. So I agree. Something that would pinpoint or, you know, highlight hero features is very well received, usually, in my opinion.
Hero features. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the features that make the platform unique. So Cortana's also borrowed stuff from Google now, such as if you have flights coming in through your email, it'll know about them. It'll know how to read your email, and it'll remind you about your flight. It'll set it up in your calendar. It'll even track it for you if you want to, all without you having to do any interaction at all. And these sort of features, they will pop up eventually because people will notice, oh, hang on, there's something new. But the feature of reminding, you know, contextual reminders to a contact, they're just, people won't know unless you tell them.
Huh. That's interesting. I wonder if it's like you said, it's on steroids, Siri on steroids. That's a bold statement.
Yeah, but I think it is. Siri's good. And it's certainly gotten better, but it's still very much a one thing at a time. As it's been my beef with iOS. I had an iPhone for a couple of years and I loved it because it was awesome. But it never really moved from there. It still is one thing at a time. So you send a text message, then you go out to the start screen, you choose another app and it continues that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with Siri. You ask it one thing. All right, done. You could do another thing. On Cortana, you can say exactly, for example, in Australia, we use Celsius. In America, you use Fahrenheit. So if I ask for the weather tomorrow, because Cortana is only available in the US, I've had to jigger my phone so that I can get it, but it tells me the temperature in Fahrenheit.
Mm.
But then the next question, I can say, oh, Cortana, show me that, give me that in Celsius. And she knows what I mean contextually that I'm referring to the previous message.
So when you say that, that context is kept.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nice. You know, it's funny. I was in Canada. I happened to take my iPhone up there, and I noticed that my wife and I were arguing, and we were asking the system how tall a particular actor was. And
yes.
It knew to give me meters while I was in Canada. And then later that day, we went back over the border, and then it told me in feet and inches.
That's nice, isn't it? That's the way it should be.
Absolutely. It should be contextual.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool.
Yeah,
it's technology is meant to enhance and make our life easier, not, you know, tearing our hair out, banging at stuff.
Indeed. The trick is, of course, making it intuitive. One man's intuitive is another person's completely unintuitive. So it all depends.
Yep. Yep.
I've noticed that some of these systems, like someone might argue, for example, that setting the region of the device or the keyboard on the device would be the reason it should do that, not based on my location. So being in Canada doesn't mean I want to switch to meters if I'm an American in Canada.
Yeah, well, yes and no. But, you know, I'm a Danish guy living in Australia, but I still want Danish keyboard and Australian keyboard on my phone because I text my mum in Danish, but I text my partner in Australian or in English. So, you know,
yeah,
there's different usage scenarios for it, I guess.
Okay. And then when do we think that Windows 8.1 is going to be everywhere? Because I know I put it on my wife's machine just by downloading the developer preview application.
I'm guessing, well, the support release cycle has been announced to start on June 24. So that's when all of us geeks are expecting it to be released.
Hmm. Well, that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that. And I suppose it'll probably be pushed out by different carriers on different devices, and it'll roll out over some number of months.
Yeah, it will usually take a few months. Depends on which carrier you're on. Obviously, if you bought a phone outright, you are not on any carrier, so you should get it straight away.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on your local carrier, how fast they are to update all of their crabware they put on it. applications.
Yeah, indeed. You know, another couple apps and a couple other things about the Windows Phone that, you know, just like they're the calling, they kind of make me want to get off my iPhone, are things like driving mode. Have you set that up?
I did set it up, and it annoyed the hell out of me.
Really?
But it's a good idea. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. It texts people back when I'm on the phone. I love that.
Yeah, well, it's a good idea. It's just that I'm used to being aware that something's happened, and suddenly it was completely silent. So maybe I didn't get used to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I have heard of people that really like it, and it'll, you know, text back and say, hey, I'm driving. I'll call you back when I stop.
Well, both my parents saw my wife's 1020, and each of them bought one. And my dad particularly likes the texting you while I'm driving thing. So if he doesn't like talking on the phone while he's driving, even though he has Bluetooth. So the phone automatically texts me when he's driving and then will remind him to call me, you know, when he stops the car. And I think that's another, that's another perfectly good commercial they should do.
Yeah, it's another feature it's a very simple feature, and it doesn't take you really any time to set up, and then it just works, but no one knows about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So people can learn more about Lars at about.me/Lars.Clint, and I'll put that on the show notes. And then when your Pluralsight course comes out, we'll put that up as well.
Lovely.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
No worries. Thanks, Scott, for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.